little bit of midrash in there and talking about the Torah from last week, going into this week's Torah portion. Brother Scott gave a great message on the remaining part of the Torah portion of Balak. And he had some important words to say there that I took it to heart. I took down some notes and some things that that will really need to be said and spoken of more in the Torah portion of Balak this morning. We're going to do just a little bit of review. Maybe you never got there, but I could tell you, just like Brother Scott said, we got more than enough slides, more than enough homework, more than enough to get through at home. We shouldn't be waiting just to come here on Shabbat or maybe just a Wednesday night to get whatever the speaker's got to say. We should be at home, taking care of business at home, getting it in our lives as much as we can, because we're learning in last week's Torah portion with Balak and Balaam, that when you get from underneath Yehovah's covering, all the trickery and all the lies of the enemy will take you away so fast, you'll be gone before you know it. And that proved that in what happened with Israel. And we stay underneath that covering as we stay in the Word, stay yoked up with Messiah, with Yeshua, and continually obeying His commands. We'll stay underneath His covering through Yeshua, staying yoked up with Him. There's a lot to get into in Pinchas, today's Torah portion, but going into there, we need to finish up and a couple of little slides in there. And before we get into that, I want to mention Brother Scott sent me a text yesterday, and I really like this. And I don't remember what Torah portion or slide it was from, but I took a picture of it, and I wanted to read that this morning. It says, we see this word, planeo, used in the Greek text, in the account when answering the Sadducees over their dispute about the resurrection, Yeshua Messiah said to them in Matthew 22:29, and it's highlighted, you go astray. You go astray not knowing the scriptures. Keep that in mind. You go astray not knowing. How are you supposed to know something or to do something if you don't know it? It says, you go astray not knowing the scriptures nor the power of Elohim. These words are so true for so many today as they go astray simply because they do not know the scriptures. And if they do not know the scriptures, it is impossible for them to know the power of Elohim. And how many knows it's easy to go astray? Even once you've come to know Yeshua, you start breaking away all the paganism and all the things mixed in the world, and you're staying rooted and grounded day and night, night and day. You're letting that incense arise. The incense and smell and fragrance of Yeshua was pleasing to the Father because the living Torah, it was the pure, clean, living Torah. And that's how we are. We're obeying His commands. In the morning, we're putting it on. In the evening, we're putting it on. But if we start being slacked, how many know your flesh can make you slack real quick? Your flesh just so easily wants to be in its luxury. It wants to be in the air condition. It just wants to lay down and feel good. And we get into this Torah portion with Pinchas. That's what happened to those Israelites. They got into a place of Shittim. Talks about Shittim. Shittim was a place of acacia trees. Acacia trees. Acacia trees, they represent something when we get into that. It was a place where we got into Egyptian trees. That's what it represents. And they got into a place of just being slack. So if you slack for a little bit one day and you say, I don't really need to, you know, go on a Wednesday night, or I don't really need to read tonight on Thursday because I'm at home, I'll get it on Shabbat. You're leading yourself on a bad path because you give an opportunity for the enemy. He knows where you're weak. He knows where he can come in at. And there's many places in my life that I'm weak in, and I work on it every day. And the moment I'm slacked in it, the enemy knows that little spot where he can slither on in. And how many knows a snake before it bites gives a hiss? It gives a hiss, and it's trickery. I watched a Facebook video yesterday. Somebody on there had a pet snake. It was green, real skinny. And it looked really unique. It was a neat-looking snake sitting in this little shrubbery in a glass case. And the guy brings a live white mouse, you know, the ones that you play with, the little red eyes, little albino looking rat. And he puts it in there for the snake, because the snake's going to eat it. And the mouse has no idea what's going on. He's all fine. He's a little pet. He's going up and down the shrubbery, and he gets to the snake, and the snake pinpoints him, and he looks at him. And the little mouse smells him on the nose, and he bites him. And the little rat kind of jumps like that. And he just kind of walks around a little bit like nothing happened. All of a sudden, he's getting kind of deluded. He's in a delusion. He don't know where he's at. And he falls down, his leg starts kicking, and he's dying. And the enemy, the serpent, the snake swallows him up. And that's what happens. We leave the Torah for a little while. We get slacked, and our pleasure of our flesh just says, you know, it's all right to leave a little while. It's all right to miss that. And then you get a little disobedient. Somebody tells you something, you lash back. You disobey the Torah a little bit. Just a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Before you know it, remember, there's two sides. There's not a middle. There's no middle grounds. And that was proven with Balaam. When we listened, when we read the Torah portion in Balak, Balaam was in between all the time, in between. But when you read about Cain, you read about Korah, you read about Shaul, Saul, with David, they were in between. There is no in between, because when you're in between, you're already done. You have to come out of mixture. You have to be clean. You have to be pure under the blood of Yeshua, continually on a daily basis. Because when you stay in the middle, sooner or later, when you are taken out, it takes your vision away. You can't see clearly anymore. You see as the world sees. They can't see. They're blinded because they don't have Yeshua. They don't have the Torah. They don't have the clear meaning of what it is to be in the Torah and to be under Yehovah. So we've seen all that with the Moabite women. They came in, and the enemy finds a way to get in, and he'll get in. If you're not listening and obeying, he will get in, and you'll be gone before you know it. Trickery and deceptive luring of the enemy will pull us away from safety. Remember, there's a way that seems right to a man. In the flesh, it seems right to a man, but its end is death. And anything that we're weak in is where the enemy will pinpoint and keep trying. And remember, he's very persistent, and he's very persuasive towards his victims. Symbolism and the sin of mixture. The Israelites of the Moabite women and the relaxed church today, mixing with paganism and doing away with the Torah that will keep us from going astray, not knowing the scriptures will lead us astray, and those who do not know the Torah have already been led astray. How many know if you don't know the Torah, just like the Sadducees and the Pharisees, they knew it at one time, but because they mixed it up so much, they didn't even realize what they were saying or doing anymore. It blinds you. It blinds you from the truth. And so that's why we're constantly praying for our eyes to see, ears to hear, and our hearts and our minds to know, and to draw interest in the Torah and Yeshua, the living Torah. There was a slide that kind of correlates where we're going today. It says, Pinchas is a great shadow picture of Messiah, who is coming as a lion that will devour and destroy the works of darkness and the wickedness of adultery against Elohim. For when he comes again, he's coming with vengeance and a great zeal. And you'll see in this Torah portion with Pinchas, he had great zeal for Yehovah and for Israel. What's that? I'm not reading that yet. I haven't got to it yet. I'm reading something else. When I get to that, I'll pull it up. Thank you. Okay. And so I'm not reading on this slide right here, but I'm reading another slide right now. It says, and wickedness of adultery against Elohim. For when he comes again, he's coming with vengeance and a great zeal. For he's a jealous El, and he'll put to death the whoring. Pinchas was not going to simply sit by and shut up when others were too afraid to take a stand. Pinchas stood up, not for himself, but Yehovah. And as we see in this account, the path of zeal for Yehovah's name, his esteem, and his righteousness, right standards, is not easy, as it requires everything of you and is often a very lonely path. And it is. It gets kind of lonely because everybody's wanting to fit in. And all of a sudden, you find yourself maybe on your job or with your family, your friends. Seems like you don't fit in. But just because you don't feel like you fit in doesn't mean that you can go ahead and just start saying what they say, doing what they do, skip out on the things of Yehovah, and think you're loving them by showing up with them all the time. All you're going to do is set yourself, your own self up for destruction, because you still got to stand your grounds and do what he says to do. You can love people and be agape, but you're not supposed to stay in that arena for a long period of time, because you end up just like them. Be bold and ardent for him in declaring the truth. I also believe that Pinchas was well trained and skilled in the use of weaponry, and he could, with precision, use the spear, which he did, with a very sharp spear. This speaks to me about our being trained and skilled in the Word. And that's why the Torah portions and all these slides are so important. Many of us have jobs, and we get skilled at what we do. Cooking, restaurant. Charter fishing, fishing. Dealing with customers and talking to them in a loving, kind way, as Yeshua would. Rehab. Many things. Sister Dawn, her family, you have many things that you've gotten skilled in. Right, Sister Jerry? You've gotten skilled in those areas. And it's the same thing with the Torah, if not more important, the Torah, for all these things that we do. We have to be well skilled and trained. How are we supposed to agape and love each other or know each other in love if we don't know the knowledge of? You have to know the knowledge of. You got to get to know him before you can be like him. We just can't make up stuff and just be gushy-gushy, lovey-lovey with everybody on a standard that's the loving love of the world. Because one day it's a friendship and a love, and next minute you hurt my feelings, I don't love you anymore. That's the world's kind of love and agape. That's not the right kind of agape. Ahava love, the way Yehovah does, is incredible, and we got to be skilled and trained in it. And how can we be skilled and trained in it if we're not staying in the Torah portions that revert to the Torah, all the prophets, and the Brit Hadishah, and Yeshua, and by the Spirit, all of them. We get it all, the whole thing. Staying trained up all week long. We must become skilled in the very word that is sharper than a double-edged sword, and be ardent to use it for the esteem of Yehovah. Let me tell you, when you take a stand and with precision use the word that cuts, you will not necessarily be popular. So do not expect any applause. I'm telling you, it's way different than the world. We got to come out of the world and continually stay in His Torah. Expect mockery, slander, coarse laughter, and bitterness. But you know, over a long period of time, you stand in your grounds with those who are out there making fun or sometimes not wanting to participate. You get around them long enough, you start seeing some different results. There's a certain couple that, couple different guys, one in particular, that before I go to work in the morning, he shows up and we talk a lot. We have a lot of talking. And so you don't see a whole lot of difference because they still hang with those types of people and everything. But the other morning we got together and he said, you know, he was on the boat and he happened to have some guys on there with him that was telling him about Yeshua, about Jesus, about God. And he said, man, it pricked me in my body so much, you know. And so it just really, really got to him and he started seeing things differently. And so he was telling me about how there's a lot of things that he don't do anymore that a lot of people still do. You know, and you know, those people, I don't know why they still do those things, but I don't do that anymore. And you know, but I said, you know what? I said, there's a lot of things I don't do anymore, but there's some things I do make mistakes in. I said, but let me tell you what Yeshua said. This is what Jesus said. And he's put it on the plane of his Father. He said, if you break the least of these commandments, you've broken them all. He said, so these people, you might not do what they do anymore, but we still break one, we're no different than them. Yehovah puts it on an even plane for everybody. You break one, you broke them all. And he's like, whoa, I never seen that before. I said, this isn't me speaking towards you saying that. You're like that. I'm just telling you what the Word says. Because remember, it's the Word that is sharper than two-edged sword, pierces the sun, dividing soul from spirit, and is discerning of the thoughts and intents of the heart. And it'll judge us rightly. And that's what the Torah does. It stands right there. We do what it says. It's for us. It blesses us. We come against it, it curses us. And that's what the Torah does. The Torah is a blessing or it could be a cursing. It is life and it is death. There's no in between. So let's not kid ourselves. Are we trying to stay in between on this middle road? We're actually on the wrong side of the road. We're getting filled with darkness. We're getting filled with blindness. And before we know it, we'll get prideful and arrogant. And we'll be just like Korah saying, hey, we're not listening to Moshe anymore. We're going over this way. Who's on this side? And take that many with them. Because it blinds you. When you try and take the in-between route, it blinds you. And what happened to the ending of Balaam? Balaam got pierced with the sword. He got thrust through and through by the Israelites down the road. Or whoever it was, I don't remember exactly. I might be speaking that part wrong. But I remember he got put through with the sword. It says, but know this, your reward is not with men. It's with Yehovah. He will applaud you and reward you for defending his esteem. Wouldn't it be something wonderful to hear the Father say, you are zealous as I am for my esteem. Right? Wouldn't you love to hear those words? And I'm sure that's what Pinchas had in his heart when he saw what was happening. He was thinking of the lives of people. So many people were about to die because you bring in a sickness and a disease of harlotry and prostitution into the camp and stuff from other nations that don't belong with us. Remember, Israel, one who prevails and overcomes with his El, one who is a pure nation under Yehovah and the Torah. They wouldn't let nothing outside in. That's why they were overshadowed and covered by Yehovah. But the minute they went and mixed, what happened? His covering comes off, death and plagues come in, and people start dying because it's not the pure living Torah anymore. It's not the true life-giving Torah anymore. These words that Yehovah spoke to Moshe make it very clear how jealous Yehovah is, and in his jealousy, he will not accept any compromise form of worship, teaching us that in our zeal for him, we must be ardent in destroying all form of false worship and compromise. And as we go through each Torah portion, we see in that in our lives what he loves and what he hates, what he likes and what he dislikes. Yeshua were completing their last year. Think about this. When we're coming out of that Torah portion into this last Torah portion, we're thinking about they were coming at the last of their years. It says right here, it says, Israel were completing their last year of their wilderness wanderings and were camped next to the Jordan River at Shittim. They would have known that they were in their last year, for Yehovah had told them that they would be in the wilderness for 40 years for their disobedience, 1 year for every day that they spied out the land and brought back a bad report. It was from this very place that Joshua would lead them across the Jordan, the Jordan, into the promised land and destroy Jericho, Jericho, and the surrounding nations. I want you to picture this for a moment. As we look back in time, the journey in the wilderness is nearly over. The land of promise is just across the river, which they can physically see. They were on the home stretch, so to speak. And the wilderness years were certainly not easy. Over 1 million adults had left Egypt, Mishraim, and were dead. Moshe's brother and sister, Aharon and Miriam, were now dead. And Moshe didn't have much longer to go either, for he also knew that he would not cross over. Yehovah had told him after he hit the rock instead of speaking to it for water at Meribah. The years in the wilderness were years of hardship and grumbling, plagues and battles, a result of their own disobedience. Nobody did it but themselves. And we do this to ourselves when we disobey. We pull ourselves away from safety. A result of their own disobedience, I might add. Yet through all, Yehovah was with them, and he provided for them food and water for over 2 million people to 40 years in the desert. 40 years in the desert, he still provided for them. Now that's ahava, that's agape love. He still loved them. And you know, we've been talking about the Shemitah. We're talking about these end times. If it's correct on the scale that we look at, we don't have much time left. And if we don't prepare, we'd be in really big trouble. But how many know preparation is better than not preparing at all? You know, if you got a hurricane coming and you say, well, it might take this track or it might not take that track. I might be taking a risk if I stay. But me and my family is important. My children are important. We'll just go on a little vacation. Let's go ahead and prepare. It might be a little tough trying to gather all the belongings just in case, hauling it all out of here. But Yehovah lets us live here for a special reason, for us to look at His Torah and see that, hey, you got to be prepared. It'd be better that you prepare than not prepare. What if you didn't prepare? Then what? Then what you going to do? You're at the last seconds. They close the gate. You can't get out. And then it really happens. You have floods, and there's many people that stayed here through Hurricane Katrina, and many of them was in the trees or in a house. And by the grace of Yehovah, they survived. But they said they would never go through that again. That was the most horrible thing they'd ever been through. It'd be like a cat caught in a tree with 100 and however many mile an hour winds for hours and hours and hours. One guy didn't have any clothes left. He just didn't have anything left. It's just a crazy thing to go through that kind of stuff. When you could be in Goshen, you could be in safety, and maybe that might not feel uneasy, being amongst a lot of family members and stuff that don't do what you do. But Yeshua was always around people that didn't do what He did. He learned how to stay in the Torah. He learned to listen to His Father and be where He told him to be at the right place at the right time. And that's what He did. And so with the Shemitah, it might be a little uneasy getting prepared, gathering a bunch of foods and getting ready for something that may or may not come immediately. But it's better to prepare and do what He says. Because, hey, if you're on the end stretch, that's where the enemy is more prone to get people. Because he just proved it with the Moabite women. He just proved it with Balaam. He just proved it with those Israelites. 24,000 died right on the end stretch. How many of us think we could be deceived easily? We can, easily. If we're not paying attention, we can get relaxed and say we're okay. We got a little storm coming. We might be all right. We'll be all right. Go ahead and relax. The snake is right there ready. Paws are ready. He sees where you're going to be weak, where you relax, paying attention to somebody else or something else, not even paying attention to anything that's being said. Paying attention or thinking even this morning, maybe what I got to do at home, what I got to do tomorrow. He gives us Shabbat to forget about all that stuff and to stay lined up with Him and listen to Him and what He's got to say today, because we got another whole week coming. Day one, day two, day three, day four. If we still focused on what we did yesterday and focusing on tomorrow, we ain't even going to make it when we get into day one. We're going to be so filled with anxieties and fears. He wants us to stay in shalom, stay in peace. And that's what He gives us His Torah and Yeshua for, to stay in shalom and peace and be ready and skilled like Pinchas was. And so we're going to finish up last week's Torah portion and go into this week's Torah portion in Balak. Starting with slide 281. It's taking a minute to pull up. See it? All right. Slide 281. Verse 10. In this verse, we see how angry Balak is after all He hired and spent a great amount on sacrifices to get this prophet for hire to curse his enemies, and it didn't work out. And while he tried to curse three times, which is a picture of trying to blot out the need to keep the feast of Yehovah, we see that to keep his feast, as recorded in Leviticus 23, is a blessing and can never be a curse, despite the lies that the church teaches through the institution of pagan-rooted feasts of sun worship that they have substituted for the Torah. Balak could not get Israel cursed the way he wanted to, and so Balaam taught him another way, joined them and invited them to their slaughterings, which we see happening at the beginning of chapter 25. This is the teaching that we are constantly warned against from holding to, the teaching of Balaam. And this teaching of Balaam with the Moabite women and all is a symbolism of a lot of the church today when you read it and you listen to it. In Revelation chapter 2, verses 12 through 17, and to the messenger of the assembly in Pergamos write, he who has a sharp two-edged sword. So everybody should know what we're talking about when we say a sharp two-edged sword. Says this, I know your works and where you dwell, where the throne of Satan is. And you hold fast to my name and did not deny the belief in me, even in the days in which Antipas was my trustworthy witness, who was killed near you, where Satan dwells. But I hold a few matters against you because you have there those who adhere to the teaching of Balaam. It's in Revelation. How are you going to know what you're talking about in Revelations if you don't know the Torah? If you don't go back to Numbers and Leviticus and Devarim, Deuteronomy, if you don't know any of these teachings, how are you supposed to know when you get to Revelations? Me and Brother Rob was talking about that last night. If you read a book from the ending and you don't know anything about Sam, you don't know anything about Henry, and you don't know anything about Nicole when you get there, you have no idea what you're reading about. You don't know anything about their lives. The middle of the book to the end of the book, from the beginning would have told you maybe about their birth, and their likes and dislikes with their mom and their dad and different things going on in their lives. It's just a parable. Yeshua used a lot of parables. The Torah is full of parables. When you go read it, it's got parables. And it's pretty incredible that the parables that he gives to help us today. I know your works. It says, but I hold a few matters against you because you have there those who adhere to the teaching of Balaam. So you need to know what the teaching of Balaam is. Because something is liked or disliked here. Who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel to eat food offered to idols and to commit whoring. Remember, Israel had food laws. Israel had the feast days. Israel had certain things they abided by. And outside of that was a lot of paganism and mixture that you couldn't mix with. He calls it food offered to idols and to commit whoring. So you also have those who adhere to the teaching of the Nicolaitans, which teaching I hate. You got to find out what he hates. Repent, or else I shall come to you speedily and fight against them with the sword of my mouth. It's the Torah. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the assemblies. To him who overcomes, I shall give some of the hidden manna to eat. If you don't read the Torah, you don't know what manna is. And I shall give him a white stone, and on the stone a renewed name written, which no one knows except him who receives it. We've done the teachings on the stone. If you want to harm Israel, Balaam counseled, you can do it another way. This brings to mind Judas. Remember, Judas was with Yeshua and the disciples, and he's sitting at the table eating with him. And he's already plotting to exchange money for him. What's Balaam doing? He's already trying to figure a way to make a trade with monies already for Israel. I know how you can get to him. But Scott talked about that Wednesday night. He was a conniver, a liar, a cheater. He was a prophet. He was, but then he wasn't. He was in between. How many know in the end times, when you're focused on the world, you're focused on all the things that they're saying, all the things they're doing, money prices are raising, things are getting impoverished, those who are focusing on Yehovah should have no fear. Yeshua was sleeping in the boat when the storm came. He said, we're going to the other side. We're on the last stretch. We're going to the other side. If you focus on the wrong things and money gets really tight, you don't have enough and you're not focusing on what Yehovah wants you to focus on, you don't know what's going to happen next. The rich are going to offer you something that you can't deny you want. And you're going to take it. And it's going to take it to just like the Israelites did, right to your deathbed. It's going to look beautiful. He's going to send the women. He's going to send the monies, everything that's pleasing to your flesh. And if you're more reliant to the flesh, you're going to give in to it and you're going to get bit. You're going to become blind and bye-bye, there you go. And Jehovah is going to say, I'm sorry, but I told you. I told you to show up on this day. I showed you to get your priorities straight, but you wouldn't listen. The flesh will lead you astray. If you want to harm Israel, Balaam counseled, you can do it another way. The teaching of Balaam was to get the sons of Israel to marry foreign daughters. This would cause Israel to lose their distinctive definition as being the children of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob. This would mix other customs with theirs and thus diminish the value of their inheritance. The Torah, Yisrael, Yehovah, Yeshua, is pure. And it doesn't change. It's the same yesterday, today, and forever. It changes not. You can't add to it. You can't take from it. If you do, you'll be just like the whoredom that happened to Yisrael. You add to it or take from it, you become dirty and unclean, full of sin and death, and you rot away. That's why he's stressing it so much, to pay attention to what I'm telling you. The church today has it so mixed up, they're so blind, they don't know where they're at. They adamantly hold on to Sunday, the first day of the week, as a day I worship Yehovah, and somebody else did that, not Yehovah. You go to Genesis, you go there, and he says 6 days, and on the seventh day, it's not hard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the world and church today has mixed it up and blinded us to the fact. And we won't go back for some reason. You got it. I got it. And won't go back. And just maybe there was a little leaven somewheres that changed the course of things to say that what Yehovah said, he really didn't mean it that way. And it's the same thing that happened in the garden with the serpent. He really didn't mean it that way. He left something out that you really need. And that's what happened with the Israelites. They went and stayed in the luxury for a little while with their flesh. And here comes the beautiful women. Here comes the harlotry and the smell and the fragrance. It looks and smells so good. There's a way that seems right to a man. And that's where they went, to their death. 24,000. And we think we can't go back to the Torah today and go recheck it, make sure. It says, this would cause Israel to lose their distinctive definition as being the pure children of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, of those who don't know Hebrew names. This would mix other customs with theirs and thus diminish the value of their heritage. It mixes it and diminishes its true purity of what it really is. This would change the teachings so that Moshe was seen as just one of their teachers and moved them gradually to a different point of view. In the end, the counsel was to assimilate Israel and make them just like anyone else by separating them from one another and removing their identity. Now today, it's just, oh, we're just Christian. Everybody gets along. Baptist, Catholic, Pentecost, whatever. We could just all get along. But we're at war with one another, but we could just all get along. I got a different message than you, but there's one message that overrides them all, and that's the Torah. The Torah overrides them all. The living Torah, the real Yeshua. And remember, there's two messiahs. There's an anti-messiah and there's a true. There's one that teaches that we've done away with the Torah and call him Jesus. And there's another one that's called Yeshua that is the living Torah. And he obeyed the whole Torah and he didn't move away from the Torah. You ought to pay attention and go back and start reading things. Maybe your eyes will open up to see that there's a false and there's a true. There's many that's being led astray by the tunes of thousands and say, we're all right. We could just all be one. We'll be all right. Just like the flesh says. There's a way that seems right to a man, but it's in his death. This would change the teachings that most... Well, I've read that part. The teaching of Balaam is to tell the sons of Israel that they no longer have a covenant with Yehovah as given through Moshe. The teaching of Balaam diminishes and removes the Torah the teaching of Moshe. The teaching of Moshe is very important. Because it's the very teaching that Yeshua, I didn't say God, I said Yeshua, as a little boy growing up read, his parents got him to studying and teaching him from a little bitty boy. And he read about Moshe, and that's how he knew it so well. He didn't mix, he didn't mingle with all the rest. He just kept paying attention and do what his father said. Today, the teaching of Balaam is rampant in the church. It comes in the form of the following precept: Jesus Christ came with the purpose to do away with or fulfill the temple service, the Torah, a law, instructions, and alter the customs of Moshe. They have not only replaced the truth with lies that were inherited from our forefathers, but they changed the name of our Savior in the process, have totally stripped away the means for many people discovering their true identity as they erroneously become attached to a Greek Hellenized name that has no meaning or substance behind it. So if you've been in the Torah portion this long, we should know by now what his name is and what Yeshua loves for us to say and what his father loves for us to say and call him. It doesn't take that much length of time to realize who he is and who the identity of Yisrael is. And when we become born again under Yeshua Messiah, we become the true Yisrael. We may not be born, blood born as a Jew or as any one of the Israelites, blood born. But when we become born under Yeshua, his blood, by faith, he purged us and cleansed us from all unrighteousness, and we get born into Yisrael. And it's not here yet, but that's what he said for us to do till he returns. And he's going to come bringing the Torah. They not only replace the truth with lies that were inherited from our forefathers, but they changed the name of our Savior, and in the process have totally stripped away the means for many people discovering their true identity as they erroneously become attached to a Greek Hellenized name that has no meaning or substance behind it. The teaching of the church is to replace Israel's true identity and falsely claim their identity in the Savior of Israel while neglecting to follow the clear Torah instructions of Elohim. So have in their Balaam teachings, they have altered the appointed times and customs of Sabbath. So when you get into Revelations, if you know Torah, you know exactly what he's talking about when he speaks to the church of the teachings of Balaam. Times and customs of Shabbat, the Sabbath. The church has done a pretty good job of doing this. Today, a new believer will run right into these stumbling blocks with churchmen disputing Yehovah's Sabbaths and feasts and the idea of keeping the Torah. In fact, this is the focal point of discussion for many new Torah observant brothers and sisters as they wrestle with the disappointment and shock of being rejected by church and friends for the so-called sin of seeking the truth being labeled as legalism. In fact, walking in and guarding the Torah is in direct conflict with the teachings of Christianity and the church at large. In these last days, we need to hold firm to the truth, and as Messiah tells us in Revelations 2, quoted above, to hold fast to what? His name, not denying the belief. And he gives the example of Antipas, who was a trustworthy witness. And what is interesting to take note of is that Antipas is a name that can mean against all or against father and mother. Now this speaks volumes, as Messiah also tells us in Mark. And Kepha began to say to him, "See, we have left all that we have followed you. We have left all, and we have followed you." And Yeshua said, "Truly, I say to you, there is no one who has left house, or brothers, sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands for the sake of me and the good news, the Besorah, who shall not receive 100-fold now in this time, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions, and in the age to come, everlasting life." In verse 17, we see the proverb that Balaam took up, that he prophesied the coming of Messiah as being the star. I went and read on all of this. This is pretty amazing what the prophet says. And it was in this Torah portion with Balak. It says, "The coming of Messiah as being the star that shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter out of Israel, who will come and smite Moab. The Hebrew word for scepter is shebet. Strong's 87626, it means rod, staff, branch, shaft, and is a symbol of authority and rulership. We know that in reference to the authority and rule of Yehovah, that the scepter would not depart from Yehuda until Shiloh, the sent one, came. And so Messiah came and took up the scepter and rules forever in the order of Melchizedek, the righteous king and high priest. This was the promise that the true line of Messiah would come from the tribe of Yehuda, and he would be praised by all. And to him is the obedience of all the peoples. For the line of the tribe of Yehuda, Judah, shall rule over all the earth. Shiloh, Strong's 87887, which was a city in Ephraim, can also mean place of rest, and further stresses how there still remains an entering into his rest for all the people of Elohim. Yet those who are disobedient and lawless shall never enter rest, and our king is coming to crush our enemies. At the end of this chapter, we see Balaam getting up and returning to his place, and Balak going his way. We got two more slides. I'm going to stop here and move on to Pinchas. Though the man Balaam did not ultimately repent and go to the place he clearly had seen was blessed, this is a prophecy that those he represents, some from the church who do seek Yehovah, will not just walk differently from the world, but return to recognizing who they really are, Yisrael. And there's a lot of people that's doing this right now. They're turning to the true Torah. They're turning and becoming true Yisrael. However, at the same time, there are those who do not recognize these truths, yet return to their own ways, do not join themselves to the truth by walking in it, and choose to simply go back to what they know. Balaam could have gone and joined Yisrael, yet he went back to his own ways. During the time he spent with Balak, he taught the enemy how to capture and lure Yisrael away from their sincerity, and this is the teaching we must rebuke. This is the teaching. There's going to be ones, I'm telling you, that are trying to lure you away and say, you know what, this is kind of hard, this is tough. You know, we really don't need to do that. We don't need to listen to Pastor Jesse. We really don't need to do that. You know, the way I see it, and before you know it, they're gone. We got to listen to our leadership. It's important to pray for our leadership. The scriptures command us to listen to our leaders. Unless it goes contrary to the Torah and the teachings of Yeshua, we must listen because they're listening to the spirit of Yehovah. And the spirit should line up with everything the Torah and the prophets and the Brit Hadishah says. It is time to stand up and walk in the truth despite the persecutions that may come even from close to us, which is what we see happening. And this chapter 25 is going to go into a lot of these slides that were in Balak was leading us on to, it's going to be in the next slides here in Pinchas. So it really prepped us. When I read through all the slides and I got to the last one, when I was in Texas by my cousin the last 2 days, I was going through all those slides and I'm like, man, these are so important. These are so important. We didn't get to talk about them, you know, on Wednesday or this night or whatever night. We're supposed to be doing it at home. And I got to Pinchas, a lot of this was carried over. So in the last Torah portion, it was there, and it was just getting us prepped for the next one to come. So if you're doing it all, you're prepping yourself for the next one to come. So here we are in the next Torah portion. That's it? Okay. Right there. The way you say this one is Pinchas. You see that? Pinchas. Hebrew for Pinchas. Strong's 86372. Which means mouth of brass. Torah. Numbers 25, 9 through 31, half Torah, 1 Kings 18, 46 through 19, 1. And that word, which means mouth of brass. You know, I talked about that last night. Mouth of brass was in a little discussion last night, me and Brother Rob, and he brought up a good point. He said he worked with brass and he worked with aluminum, how you can liquefy it, and still brass is very, very heavy. And we talked about that, you know, the Torah and Yehovah, his words, he has the floor, he has the weight, his weight. He's in charge of everything. So think about that with brass. It's heavy. Mouth of brass. Mouth of brass. Topic in this Porsche. Pinchas. Hebrew for Pinchas. Strong's 86372, which means mouth of brass. Chapters 25 through 26, the story of the son of the high priest Pinchas and the recounting of an updated census. Topics. Strong's 86372, which means mouth of brass, chapter 27. Moshe told he would die and to anoint Yehoshua. Chapter 28 through 29, the designated timings of Jehovah. And here we're on Baal worship. That's where we're going to go into on the last Torah portion I just ended. It was in there. And here we're going to this Torah portion. Baal worship at Peor. Numbers 25, verse 1. And Israel dwelt in Shittim. And the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. And they invited the people to the slaughterings of their mighty ones. And the people ate and bowed down to their mighty ones. That's all it takes is a little invite. You're not paying attention. You're not staying your ground where you're supposed to be in Yehovah. And you get those little invitings. But people that's not on your, doing the things that you do. Or saying the things that you say. Or living the way that you live. And Israel, okay, and it says, and they invited the people to the slaughterings of their mighty ones, and the people ate and bowed down to their mighty ones. Thus Israel was joined. You see, pastor's got that highlighted for a reason. Joined. Joined to Baal Peor, and the displeasure of Yehovah burned against Israel. And Yehovah said to Moshe, take all the leaders, keep that in mind. We're talking about leaders. Leaders carry a lot of weight because they carry a lot of people with them. Korah was a leader. He carried a lot of weight. He carried a lot of people when the mouth of the earth opened up and took them down. Many lives are lost. And however, the other way, carry a lot of weight, you do what you're supposed to in obedience and reflect that every day, wherever you go, all the time, like Yeshua, you bring them into the kingdom with you. Whosoever will. So it's got a lot of weight being a leader. And Moshe, he said, take all the leaders of the people. These are all leaders that went in disobedience. And hang them up before Yehovah, before the sun. Boy, when you just read that before the sun, that really makes you cringe when you think about Sunday and sun god worship and all the things that we were taught. It really makes you cringe because the sun's always involved for some reason. When you look in certain churches, you have this halo over these apostles' heads. There's no halo over the head of one in the heavenlies. That means something. It's sun god worship. You ought to go do research on that kind of stuff. Thank you, Father. Before the sun, so that the burning displeasure of Yehovah turns away from Israel. Remember, there was ways that in the past that they had to do to stop the plagues. Moshe had to stand in account for them to stop the plagues. And Moshe said to the judges of Israel, each one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal Peor. And see, one of the children of Israel came and brought to his brothers a Midianite woman before the eyes of Moshe and before the eyes of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tent of appointment. I got to go back to that. Who are weeping at the door of the tent of appointment. And when Pinchas, son of Eleazar, son of Aharon, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and he took a spear in his hand. And he went after the man of Yisrael into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Yisrael and the woman through her belly. And there's a reason why the woman was speared through her belly. And it's going to talk about that, about the reproductive organs and the way you use things in the wrong way and hoard them and harlotry and prostitution and things that's highly against Yehovah and the way a marriage is really supposed to be between a man and a woman. Thus, the plague among the children of Israel came to a stop. And those who died in the plague were 24,000. Israel dwelt in Shittim. Shittim, Strong's, H7851, which means a place of acacias. And I looked up acacia trees. Acacia is a Greek word, acacia in the Greek, which means Egyptian trees, Egyptian thorny trees. And they have beautiful flowers. So you might want to go look that up. That could be a good little study there. Because when they walk into Shittim, the land of Shittim, and when they went to dwell there, there's these beautiful Egyptian trees that have thorns on them, and they're beautiful, and they smell fragrant. I even read about the sap on them. If you eat the sap, a taste of it, it can get you sick. It won't kill you. But there's a lot of teachings on this Hebrew word Shittim and the Greek, acacia. It's a good little writer. You know, Yehovah knows everything before it happens. He's got it all set up. He knows everything that's lined up before it happens. He tells us what to do, what not to do before we get there. There's things that's going to be luxurious looking, pleasing to the flesh, tempting. But for those who know better, they're going to stand their ground like Pinchas did, and Eleazar, and Moshe. You would think by now, well, let me finish reading. It says, the place of acacia, it says, and it was here where they began to whore with the daughters of Moab. Instead of being on their guard, remember, Shema, Shemar, and Asa means to hear, guard, and do. That's what we read when we get there in the morning. Shema, hear Yisrael, Yehovah is one. And we're to obey Yehovah and do everything he tells us to do in hearing and guarding and obeying. They got too relaxed, and this place of acacias and slacked off. You would think by now that after all they had been through, all the victories they had won, and all the disciplining that had gone on, that they would have been more on their guard to not whore with the foreign nations, and especially Moab. You know, that goes for us too. All week long, the Father tells us by His Spirit through Pastor Jesse and our leadership, it's important that I know this road is narrow. I know it's really tight. I know it kind of digs into your schedule, but it's really important that you do this each week. Do this each week. Eat it up. Fill your lamp with oil. Be prepared for what's to come. And so you do that and do that. But there's those who come maybe on a Shabbat and at home, they'll do nothing. And come back on Shabbat and maybe talk about things that happened, but don't do nothing. And don't do nothing. And then all of a sudden, here comes a storm. Well, of course, it's going to be easy to give in to the wrong thing because you never studied, you never read, you never did the things he said, you never showed up day one, you never showed up on the day he said to, that's day seven. And so it's not hard to fall off. You would think by now that after all they had been through, all the victories they had won, and all the disciplining that had gone on, that they would have been more on their guard to not whore with the foreign nation, especially Moab. Maybe these individuals was not paying attention to the Torah or being told or doing what they were told. Maybe they were looking out before they even got there and just set themselves up for when it did come because the enemy was watching. Oh, they're checking out the world. Woo, they're looking at this on maybe Facebook or maybe they're participating with their friends in things that they're not supposed to be participating in. They're still being slacked. They're still being slacked. And before you know it, bang, those who were listening stayed their ground. Those who wasn't listening, they fell off. In 1 Corinthians 10:8, it says, neither should we commit whoring as some of them did. And one day, 23,000 fell. They were enticed by women of Moab. This is how the enemy is so very deceiving. Through the lust of the flesh, and Balak sent his finest women to lure the men of Israel into joining them. The enemy's motto is, if you cannot beat them, join them. And this was his plan, to subdue this great nation. And this is what's going to happen in the last day, on the last home stretch. The enemy's going to see where you're lacking, see where you're playing around, not paying attention. Because what they were doing way back when read, they were eating and drinking and playing, even with Noah, right before the flood. Ha, laughing, y'all building a boat. Oh, yeah, ha, ha, ha. Laughing and cutting up and still doing everything day. That, you know, they go to church on Shabbat, on Sunday, Saturday. We're okay, we go on Sunday. We'll be all right. Why? Where you see that at? Where you read it in your Bible? Where did he say to go to church on that day? Where does he say his Shabbat is on that day? Go back and find it for me. You go find it and show me where he changed it. And so that's some of the things that are very important to pay attention to in the last days. Many, many will be deceived. The enemy's motto is, if you can't beat them, join them. And this was his plan, to subdue this great nation. The word for whore is zana. Strong's H2181, meaning to commit fornication, to be a harlot, commit adultery, to play the harlot. And when we veer away from his commands, that's what we're doing. It's symbolism. It's in one way, we're fornicating, husband, wife, harlotry, with many women, many men, seduction through the flesh, and it's also to do with the way we do towards Jehovah. He's given us blessings after blessings after blessings, and we're taking his blessings and doing this with him and throwing him in the garbage by playing harlotry, not obeying him and taking him at his word, not being a pure bride, not being a pure, spotless bride. It says, playing the harlot can also be a term used render being spiritually unfaithful. Spiritually unfaithful to Yehovah, which is exactly what they were doing. On one sense, they were in harlotry with women, but at the same time, they were committing spiritual harlotry on Yehovah, not being the pure nation that they were supposed to be by mixing with other nations. It's exactly what they were doing here. How is it that for a response to the blessing, right? How was that for a response to the blessing? I'm fixing to take you in to the land flowing with milk and honey. You're fixing to cross over the Jordan, the Jordan, and here they are, laying around, relaxed. We're going to be all right. We can go ahead and do that. It's not going to be a problem at all. The snake hisses before he strikes. I think that is the same for some namesayer today who do not realize the great blessings we have in Messiah, and too many take it for granted and end up playing the harlot with the world that so easily lures them away, because they are found to be in a place of thinking that they have arrived and relaxed in their ability to be watchful and obedient. They were endangering their lives by befriending the world. If you are a friend with the world, you are enemies with Yehovah. Because remember, there's no light in the world at all. It's darkness. Remember, he says, I raise you up because you possess the light of life to give to the world that's in darkness. He said, I didn't give you possession of the light of life to go in there and be as they are, because if you go out there and you be as them, this is what happens to your light. Your light goes out. You're in darkness and you're no different than what they are. You're done. You're leading your own self astray. You can't mix with darkness and think you're okay. You're deceiving your own self. You're going back to the flesh. And that's why whenever you try and speak in their terms, Yeshua said, I speak to you in parables, but they don't hear what you say because they're in darkness. So what benefit is it to them if you go back and do what they're doing? You're in darkness too. You have to be light to the nations. You can't mix. It's impossible. You cannot mix light and darkness. It's impossible. You can't mix oil and water. We proved that in a bottle. We put it in there, Pastor put the oil in the water. And he shook it up. He set it on a table. And within a little while, the oil and the water separated. There is no mixture. You're just deceiving yourself. They were endangering their lives by befriending the world. Jacob, James. When I say Jacob, I say Jacob. We've learned in the past about this word James. It shouldn't be in the New Testament. It should be Jacob there. That was placed there. It's another whole teaching, another story about King James. had his name put in there, inserted in the place where it should say Jacob, Jacob. So when we say Jacob, that's just a little clue. Maybe you might want to go look up that name where it came from. 4, verses 3 through 4. You ask and do not receive because you ask evilly, in order to spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity or enemies with Elohim? Whoever therefore intends to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of Elohim. At Mount Sinai, if you go back to the Torah, at Mount Sinai we were told to not do this. Yet we must constantly be on our guard against the luring tactics of the enemy. And we think that there is no way that these kind of tricks and whoring tactics can catch us, then we had better be doubly alert. Hasatan's been around for a very long time, since the garden. And his trickery and deception is through the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. So if you want to go playing around in the world and think you're okay, I feel sorry for you, because you will be deceived. That's why these Torah portions and all these slides have been given to us, to take our schedule and make adjustments. Because he said, this is your life. This is your life. Blessings and curses. Life or death. So what's more important to us? Is our life important to us, or is it not? No matter how my day goes, how good I think it was, at the end of the day, I say, Yeshua, I'm sorry, please forgive me. I need your blood today to cleanse me from all my unrighteousness, to make sure I'm seeing correctly and hearing correctly and thinking correctly. And I thank you for your word, for this is my life. Your word is my life. Not mixed up, but separated and pure and clean as you are towards the Father even today. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. So that he who thinks he stands, let him take heed lest he fall. Israel went and ate with Moab at the slaughterings of their mighty ones, when this is strictly forbidden. Be careful how far you go with a little leaven, because before you know it, you'll be telling yourself, it's okay. It's okay. Miss a little bit, do a little bit. It's okay to look at a little bit. It's okay to visit a little bit. It's okay to do this a little bit. It's okay to do this or that on Shabbat a little bit. Before you know it, you'll be doing exactly what it told you not to do. We are told that we have the appointed times to come and feast as a body together in Messiah. And like Linda was saying for worship today, you know, I was thinking about this. If there be one, or there be two, there be three, or there be a congregation filled. The point is, on Shabbat, he says to gather. Gather. What's Israel always doing? They're always gathering. Don't get outside the tribe. Don't get outside the plumb line. Keep the Torah. Keep it pure. Keep it pure. And a bunch of this Torah portion going into it, it gets pretty strict. It gets pretty bold. It's just like the Torah portion is. Pinchas, he was bold, and he was adamant about his God, Yehovah. He was adamant about keeping what his father, Eleazar, represented. So it's going to get up in your face in here. And we should know this already. This shouldn't be hard. But maybe those of you who are watching on Facebook or listening, who's never heard this before, it might get all up in your face. Don't reject it. Don't turn away from it. Pray about it. Ask the Father. Maybe we have been blinded by something. It says, Israel went and ate with Moab at the slaughterings of their mighty ones when this was strictly forbidden. We are told that we have appointed times to come and feast as a body together, Messiah. And we also partake in the Pesach meal, which gives us our identity in sealing him. And therefore, we cannot be found keeping other pagan rooted feasts. You know, I had someone tell me the other day, you know, was talking about, went to a church, and they were talking about eating the Pesach, you know, what's that word for it? When we partake of the meal, what we call it, we do this in remembrance of him. It's a Passover, but it, Many churches, communion, that's the word I was looking for. I'm sorry, I was pulling a blank. They say, yeah, our church was teaching and they was talking about all the times that you can do communion. I said, you know, in my Bible that I read, he said, we're only supposed to do that one time a year. It represented Pesach, it represented Passover. And I said, how many times did Yeshua die for us? One time. So how many times we partake of him? One time. How many times do you get born again? One time. So how is it that so many churches constantly taking this communion, maybe once a week, once a month, twice a month, over and over? It says if you do this like they do, you do it to your own destruction and sickness and disease. There's a certain time and a certain place, a certain way that you do things, and he commands it. And so I was able to share that. You might want to go back and read your Bible and see how many times you're supposed to do things. It says, to partake in the Pesach meal, which gives us our identity and seal in him. And therefore, we cannot be found keeping other pagan-rooted feasts as well, such as Christmas and Easter, which is nothing more than feasts at the table of demons. Now, for the first time that I hear something like this, they're like, oh, I can't believe this. But when you go dig into the roots of it, where it came from, you start seeing the sexual immorality in Christmas. All the decorations and all the symbolism, it makes you want to puke. You're like, really? I can't believe I was steeped into this. I did this with baby Jesus all my life. I'm like, I can't believe what I represented, what I looked at, and what I thought of. And that's why the whole world does it. And the whole world does it like it's their life. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this does opposite of what Yehovah teaches me. And it's a seriously bad symbolism to participate in. It says in 1 Corinthians 10, 16 through 22, the cup of blessing which we bless, is it not a sharing in the blood of Messiah? The bread that we break, is it not sharing the body of Messiah? This bread that we break, what does it represent? It represents our master, Yeshua. His body that was broken for us to cleanse us and clean us, to get us back to putting the Torah back on and to be a living Torah like he is, because it was dirty, filthy, stained from the world. The bread that we break is it not a sharing in the body of Messiah? Because there is one bread. We who are many are one body. For we all partake of one bread. Look at Israel after the flesh. Are not those who eat of the offerings sharers in the altar? What then do I say? That an idol is of any value? Or that which is offered to idols is of any value? No. But what the Gentiles offer, they offer to demons and to not to Elohim. It gets deeper than that. When you participate in those things, you're participating with demons. It might sound strange to you, but once you dig into it and start praying, ask the Father, give me eyes to see, give me ears to hear, and give me a heart and a levav, a heart and a mind to know, you start seeing these things, and you'll repent, and you'll turn from it. It says, they offer to demons and not to Elohim. And I do not wish you to become sharers with demons. You're not able to drink the cup of the master and the cup of demons. Here we go again. What was Balaam doing? What was Korah doing? They were mixing. You can't mix. You're not able to drink the cup of the master and the cup of demons. You're not able to partake of the table of the master and the table of demons. Do we provoke the master to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? This is a very serious warning, as we cannot allow ourselves to be lured into keeping the traditional pagan feasts of Christmas and Easter with other family members for the sake of peace. We can't do things, I just love. What do Pinkas do? Oh, they just walked in here, they committing adultery. You know, you just got to love them. You have agape love. You just let it into the camp. Before you know it, the whole camp is full of it, and everybody's gone. All it takes is a little leaven to leaven the whole lump. It didn't take Yehovah but a second. When Aharon's two boys walked in there with the wrong, and it wasn't like he wanted to do it on purpose, his Torah stands, and no flesh can glory in his presence that's full of sin. And when they walked in, it destroyed them. Boom, burned them up. Kill them right there. Because you have to do it the way he said to do it, because that's his character and that's who he is. It says we must flee such whoring and the playing the harlot, so to speak. We do not want to be sharers with demons, because this is who these feasts are offering up to, not Elohim. So he has his feast days, where Israel participates in. And then you have the pagan ones that churches are mixed in. They didn't offer up the demons. They offered to Jehovah. They offer up the demons. That's where we were. And that's what we came out of. Baal Peor was a Moabite mighty one. Where do we get this from? Do your homework, people. Baal Peor was a Moabite mighty one, which service included sexual immoral acts. The name, I'm telling you, Ishtar, Easter. She's the fertility god. It's based on sexual immoral acts. Christmas. You know what Christmas means? Christmas. It means that we're glad that Christ is dead. You don't even know what you're saying when you say it if you don't go back and do your homework. Baal Peor was a Moabite mighty one, which service included sexual immoral acts. The name Baal means husband, landowner, and its general meaning and term as used in pagan adultery and worship is Lord. Our English translations are loaded with Lord, Lord, Lord. And he says, do not bring my name to naught. His name is Jehovah and his son's name is Yeshua. Don't get that mixed up. Because after you know it over a long period of time, the translators come in and put Lord, 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 God, 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 and bring his name to naught. Even this word Lord is a little bit steeped in some things we didn't even know when we read it here. It says, Baal means husband and landowner, and his general meaning and term as used in pagan adultery and worship is Lord. Which may be a little shocking to you if you have never realized this. The term Lord is an inherited term from pagan worship used for thousands of years. And most of Christianity, when we talk, you hardly ever hear the name of Yehovah, or if at all, you hear the name Jesus, or you hear a lot, the Lord, the Lord, the Lord, 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 Lord. The Bible's just full of Lord, 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 Lord. You never even get to hear his name anymore. We brought his name to naught. We got to go back and do our homework. Got to go back and find out what he says, because that was in the beginning of the commandments. Do not bring my name to naught. He didn't start it out saying, thou shalt have no other gods before me. He said, you shall not bring my name to naught. His name is important, because throughout the scriptures you'll see, in my name, in my name, in my name, in his name. Let's not bring his name to naught, because when we disobey his commands, we bring his name to naught. The term Lord is an inherited term from pagan worship used for thousands of years. Peor, Strong's 86465, was the name of a mountain in Moab. Every name is significant in the Hebrew writings and the teachings. This name comes from the word Peor, Strong's 86473, which is a verb meaning open wide. Remember, wide is the gate to destruction, and many go there. Narrow is the gate to eternal life, and very few find it. The name comes from the word par, 86473, which is a verb meaning open wide. And so in essence, Baal Peor can be accurately rendered as Lord of the opening, or Lord that opens wide. We know that Yeshua says that wide is the way that leads to destruction, and many find it. The occurrences of this verb, or to open wide, indicate a junction with the strong passion or feeling, usually not very positive, and describe the wide opening of the mouth, hence alluding to other body cavities. We don't have to go into that detail. Adults know what we're talking about. Wide opening. It gets pretty as bad. Hoshea remarks on Baal Peor event, Hoshea 9:10, and it's clear that the Israelites defiled themselves with abundant fornication, sexual perversion, as the Baal worship rites were celebrated by the grossest obscenity. So here we can translate that being joined to Baal Peor meant being led on the wide path of destruction. We are to be joined We are to be the joined body of Messiah, joined to Messiah Yeshua, being led in His narrow way. Hosea 9:10, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first fruits on the fig tree in his beginning. They themselves have gone to Baal Peor, and separated themselves to shame, and became as abominable as that which they loved. You got to love it. You got to love getting into the Torah. You can't treat it as a rule. Remember, it's instructions. The Besorah is the good news. It's the good news of what? I'm getting my life back. I'm getting it through Yehovah. I'm finding out what He is and what He loves, what He likes and dislikes. I love it. You become to love it. If you're treating it as a rule, you're more than likely not going to stay. You can't treat it as a rule. You can't say, oh, it's time to go. Oh, I got to read. You got to fall in love with it. In essence, Baal worship is giving free rein to the carnal nature, which is the flesh, and is expressed in gluttony, drunkenness, and sexual acts. This form of pagan worship comes from ancient Babylon, as the worship of Nimrod was started by Semiramis, known as the Queen of Heaven, or Ishtar, today known as Easter, who was a pagan goddess of fertility and the mother of Tammuz. She worshiped the son of Baal, who would be reborn every year on December 25th. You might want to check out what December 25th is all about. It's nothing to do with Yeshua's birth. You see, celebrating these pagan festivals under the misguided lie of worship unto Yeshua is, in fact, the way people today are engaging in Baal worship. By simply eating or partaking in these pagan feasts, Shaul tells us that by doing this, one became joined to the foreign mighty one. 1 Corinthians 6:15 through 18, do you not know that your bodies are members of Messiah? Shall then take the members of Messiah and make them members of a whore? Let it not be. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a whore is one body? For he says, the two shall become one flesh, and he who is joined to the master is one spirit. Flee whoring. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits whoring sins against his own body. By joining ourselves to a foreign pagan rooted worship practice and feast will put us at war with Elohim. For he is a jealous Elohim, and we dare not cheat on him. Yehovah tells Moshe to take all the leaders of the people and hang them. This might sound like a very extreme measure, but these leaders were not leading as they should and had not guarded the charge of staying faithful to Yehovah, and this kind of leadership needed to be made an example of. This was a death sentence on those who brought into the camp a mighty one that Israel had never known, and they were warned not to whore and follow the mighty ones of other nations. The judges were instructed to kill the men who had joined themselves to Baal Peor. Just as this instruction was given to one of the Israelite men, brought in a Midianite woman before Moshe and before all those who were weeping at the door of the tent of appointment. There wasn't even a secrecy to their whoring. It was out in the open for all to see. They had not only committed sexual acts of sin on the altars of Baal, but now they had brought this sin into the dwelling place of Yehovah. This was no ordinary prostitute, as she was the daughter of a head in the people of Midian. And she was the daughter of the head of the people of Midian, a Moabite. Just like Isabel, and this is not to be tolerated in Israel. What happened to Jezebel? Just as the prophecy was foretold, she fell out the window, flat on her face, and she was eaten up by the dogs, and nothing was left but her handprints in the ground. It's not a good place to be. You don't want to end up in harlotry. You don't want to sin and mix. This called for some bold courage to stand up and put this idolatry and sexual sin to death. And this is where we see Pinchas, the grandson of Aharon, stand up and take some much-needed action. And by his actions, Yehovah caused the plague of death to stop, which had taken 24,000 people. You want to be like Pinchas? You want to be brave and bold? When you get out there, you do what you come in here and hear. When you hear it, you put it on. When you hear it's time for Shabbat, you don't go work on Shabbat. You come here on Shabbat and the people watch you, and they pay attention to you, and you stand bold on your statement, and you don't move from it. When he says do this or do that, you do that. When the Spirit of Yehovah, because that's what he's given us, his Spirit. When he says take a step forward, that's where you step. When he says go here, you go there. When he says you stay, you stay. When he says don't do what they're doing, you don't do what they're doing. He says, I give you the set-apart Spirit. And he won't speak of himself. He'll speak only what he hears the Father say. And he says, and I'll tell you where to go, when to do it, and how to do it. And I'm going to tell you what is to come. And so far we learned about the Shemitah. He's saying, this is what's to come, and Jubilees. We're learning about all those things that are very important. He says, so we need to be bold like Pinchas. And as we read into this Torah portion, go in there. That's the end of the CD. That's the end of the Torah portion on the CD. But I'm just going to end it right here. The name of this brave priest was Pinchas, Strong's 86372, which means mouth of brass. And he certainly lived up to his name, taking no nonsense, as he took a spear in his hand and thrust the spear through both of those who were whoring in the camp. And in fact, he thrust the spear through the belly of the woman. This is her kabah, which means stomach or belly of a woman. In essence, we see here that Pinchas thrust the spear through her reproductive organs, and so in effect was putting to death the sin of adultery and the curse that comes with it, by thrusting the spear through the very part of a woman where the seed of life would come forth. There wasn't going to be no more reproductive coming out of that woman anymore of whoredom. It was over with. It was done. And that's what we need to do. We need to stand in faith of Yeshua, with the blood of Yeshua, and stand according to the works, the things of the Torah, and we're going to be clean, a pure bride, a clean and pure bride. And so let's pray as we're getting ready to leave. We're fixing to head on up to Indiana. The rest of the party has already left and headed that way. We're going to continue to pray for them.